Atenção, senhores espectadores. Muito boa tarde.
Corkout History presents
Grândola Vila Morena,
The Carnation Revolution.
A partir deste momento, o movimento das Forças Armadas,
brought to you by André and Inês,
controla totalmente a rede emissora da Rádio Televisão Portuguesa.
During the Estado Novo regime, Portugal witnessed systematic persecution and marginalization of many minority groups. And in this we can of course count the homosexuals, the LGBT plus community, the prostitutes, beggars, gypsies, anyone that was deemed out of the norm. The regime's authoritarian control extended to social and moral spheres and imposed strict norms and penalized everyone that was outside and that would deviate from these social standards. The beggar, the vagrant, the mad person, the prostitute, the homosexual, and so many others were all a danger to Salazar's version of a national identity. Today we're going to be looking at the legal framework for two of those groups. During Salazar's regime, homosexuality was criminalized under Article 10 of the Penal Code. In Portugal, homosexuality was actually prohibited and punishable by law since 1886, a situation that persisted until 1982. Although the revolution had come in 1974 and democracy came with it, it was only 1982 that the laws would actually be changed. The law targeted those who habitually, and I quote, engage in vices against nature. Legal measures that were taken against them included confinement to labor houses and the prohibition from practicing certain professions. Until 1952, the Mitra, established in 1933, was a place of confinement, a very famous one. The Pisão Labor Colony was another institution for homosexuals that were arrested by the police. Homosexuality was widely regarded as a disease at the time, and that led to many being institutionalized in psychiatric facilities and subject to treatments and all sorts of therapies, as we know. Female homosexuality, however, was largely overlooked during this period. Clandestine networks and informal support systems emerged within the LGBT plus communities that would provide solidarity and mutual aid. Here and there, figures in the public sphere deemed deviant were, we may say now, resisting in their own way. One notable figure was, for instance, António Boto, a poet whose work often explored homoerotic themes, and his whole poetry and public persona was challenging the traditional notions of masculinity, and this is also a way of defying the regime's expectations and fighting against the oppression. Let's not forget that, as with most issues, Salazar's regime officially denied the existence of homosexuality in Portugal, adopting a stance that what was not acknowledged in public discourse was actually non-existent. Any mention of homosexuality in newspapers, magazines, or whatever publication was swiftly censored. Nevertheless, despite Salazar's assertions, the PID, the police, actively targeted homosexuals in Portugal from the onset of the regime. Police forces would conduct raids on bars and private residences that were suspected of having any connection to homosexual activity. Individuals that were arrested during these operations were often taken to clandestine detention sites, where they, of course, undergone torture as part of the regime's persecution tactics. Likewise, prostitutes were subject to moral scrutiny and legal persecution under the regime. Laws criminalizing prostitution were strictly enforced, and sex workers, of course, faced social stigma and exploitation. The legal landscape surrounding prostitution in Portugal evolved over time. In 1949, there was a law, Law No. 2036, that was addressing sexually transmitted diseases, and that was aiming to impose stricter regulations on individuals that were involved in prostitution, including a ban on opening new brothels. Existing establishments, however, could also face closure if they were deemed a public health risk. That was a way to frame them in a way that was easier to shut them down. A study conducted during that period estimated around 5,276 prostitutes and 485 brothels, mainly clustered, of course, around major urban centers like Lisbon, Porto, Coimbra, and Évora. However, we also need to bear in mind that registered prostitutes represented only a fraction of the total number, and the aim of this law was to eliminate prostitution. By 1954, a new decree would extend the prohibition of prostitution to all overseas territories. A couple of years after that, in 1963, prostitution was outlawed in mainland Portugal as well. This legislation, this change, this last change in 63, led to the closure of many brothels and other related establishments, and it did mark the end of an era where prostitution was almost regulated and where prostitutes would have access to mandatory medical checkups. And even if these measurements had limited practical impact, it did change the landscape. During the 60s and the 70s, it was actually one of the biggest causes of female incarceration. Needless to say, male prostitution was never formally acknowledged. It would only be in 1983 that new amendments were done to the code, allowing for individual prostitution, although not explicitly stated like that, while prohibiting its exploitation and encouragement by third parties. The Estado Novo had very clearly defined gender roles and expected gender performances as well. Anything that fell outside that was deemed in the big box of the deviants, the lunatics, the deceased. Escaping those imposed limits was a struggle that was fought by many, some loudly, some more quietly, but definitely paving the way for all of us today. Life carried on, somehow, despite it all. And if you want to read on more personal stories of the poor, of the homosexual, of the prostitute, of the transsexual under the regime, we would highly recommend that you give a look to an article published in Público newspaper in 2017 with the title The Damned of the Estado Novo, shedding light on stories and journeys that were shaped by these years of repression and resistance. We will leave the link in the description for you to read, and we will try to keep on telling these stories so that we don't forget.
And this is where we'll stop for now. Join us on the next episode.
Until then, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Corkout History Pod, where you can reach out to us, let us know your thoughts, and discover more about the episodes.
Don't forget to rate and subscribe wherever you're listening to us.
Your comments really are crucial so that more people can find us.
Bye!